Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? Just go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsorship button, and you can find out how. For just $20, we'd say something nice about you here, and maybe compliment those shoes you're wearing. Or if you'd like to contribute to our legal fund, go to gofundme.com/nerdandtie, and we'll be your best friend. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, Star Trek Discovery's been renewed for a second season, 3 new Doctor Who companions have been revealed, the Han Solo movie is wrapped and finally has a friggin' title, someone wants to make a Settlers of Catan movie, Constantine gets to actually be bisexual on television even, and Gen went to Anime Fusion, and we're told it was totally a thing that happened. All this and more on Nerd and Tie.
My God.
Yes. Welcome to Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your hosts, Trey Dorn. Joining me, as always, are the amazing Genprock.
Sup.
And the splendiferous wonderiferous Nikizumi.
I was kind of hoping I could be spectacular, so that way the theme would be like Spider-Man titles, but that's okay. That's okay.
If you think I have a theme besides just saying how great you are, you're very wrong.
It's so good to be back after another fortnight of
justice. It's been a long fortnight, and for listeners at home, getting this episode together has been kind of a problem.
We always try
to record on Sunday night, although that's been falling apart more and more. Again, we're still traveling back from Anime Fusion, which we'll talk about later in the episode. And then on Monday night, when we were going to record, Gen forgot her microphone.
Well, okay, so what happened is that my significant other is a DJ.
Yep.
And he was putting on Kitsune Kan's Fall Ball. He's the dance head there. So he needed the microphone that I technically borrow from him for that event on Saturday night. And so he had it in his car along with a lot of the other equipment because he just hadn't brought it in the house yet because blech.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was just like, oh, wait, it's time to record the show. And the microphone is in the car, and he's at work. And I can't really, like, ask him to, like, run it back or, like, ugh.
We were just like, we could either record really late at night on Monday night, or we could just delay it another day. And then when we went to do the show today, when I went to call them on Skype, I couldn't get... Skype was not... Usually I initiate the Skype call that we use to record this on, and Skype would not let me dial anyone. Like, it wouldn't even let me dial the test call. And thankfully, it let one of these two start the call. And we were... But, like, there was about a good 20 minutes where I thought we weren't going to be able to record today, and it was going to be, like, okay,
Yeah, it was a weird... It's been a weird journey.
It's been a journey. You know what else has been a journey? To get into our first story, bringing Star Trek Discovery to air. But, even after massive delays, changing showrunner, and whatever the hell they're doing with the Klingons, it's here. And for the most part, as a series, as a Star Trek, it is, I will argue, the strongest the first season of a Star Trek series has been since the original series.
Of what I've seen so far, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seasons of Star Trek are always like this really weird mixed bag.
I've been watching Voyager this week and the first season of Voyager, and I'm like 10 episodes in and I'm just crying. It's just not.
It's a pretty bad first season.
It is. And I like Voyager overall. I really like Voyager. But that is not a... Anyways, although I will point out that Captain Janeway's spirit animal was a lizard. when she went on her vision quest. And I feel like that makes Threshold just all come full circle. Anyways, so the reason we're talking about Star Trek Discovery is because it has officially been renewed for a second season by CBS All Access.
Heck yeah.
The president of CBS Interactive was talking about how it brought up, you know, brought in record viewers and subscribers to CBS All Access and blah, 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 blah. Now, we don't know any of the numbers about the show, but really what everything sounds like is this is the only thing people are watching on CBS All Access. They have to keep making the show or else no one's going to pay for the service. So the bad news is that season two isn't going to probably air until 2019, which feels further off than it really was. So the only the first half of season one is airing this year. It'll air through November. And then they're going to air the second half of season one in the spring. It makes sense. And so really, we're only going from like spring 2018 into 2019. It's not like, you know, waiting, you know, like it's not like we got to wait from like now until 2019 to get more episodes. So, but I'm like, they're stringing us along as long as possible. I think it's a great thing that Discovery got renewed. I really hope Ash Tyler's a Klingon. I'm just saying it. I really want to be a Klingon.
I'm very glad that it got renewed as well.
Yeah.
I liked what I've seen of it, and I think it's a very strong show.
But I think the bigger risk is whether or not there's going to be a network in 2019.
Like, yeah, well, maybe this is for the better. Maybe it'll get renewed and CBS won't have a streaming service, so they'll just be like, man, we better put it on regular TV.
But they don't put their regular TV on any streaming services.
That's a problem.
Other than this stupid one. So, I'm just saying, I want it. Discovery, I am like 75% on board with the show. My one problem is the Klingons, and they'll have me completely on board if Ash Tyler turns out to be a Klingon.
Indeed.
Nick has no idea who I'm talking about, but he's just a character.
Yeah, I'm just like, yep. That sure sounds like a human.
See, right now, nothing's been revealed, so it's not a spoiler to say there's a character named Ash Tyler. He sure is saying he's a human.
I only wish that it was instead Ash Williams, because that would be groovy.
I would watch Ash Williams in space.
Oh my god. Ash versus Evil Dead, next season. Call Gen and me. We'll give you a storyline that'll send Bruce Campbell
but,
to space.
But actually,
let's start writing the script.
On the other hand, perhaps we should do Ash vs. Evil Dead, a season where it's Ash Ketchum instead of Ash Williams.
Oh, now there would be a show.
I like it.
There could be some really interesting twists there.
I know, right?
Especially
Can you see
Deadeye Pikachu? That's just all I'm saying.
Oh man, that'd be heartbreaking, but
appropriate.
Appropriate.
So anyway, Star Trek Discovery is going to get a second season, and that is super neat, and I'm all for it. And
It's Star Trek. It's new. It's actually pretty good Star Trek, so.
Yeah, and it fits. Everything fits except the Klingons.
Let's fix that show. You can do it.
So this is what happens. I get really excited about Discovery. I watch the episodes. Like, the episodes have been getting better and better. Like, we've had some really good episodes. And, like, this season's been really good so far. And then what happens is that I think about the Klingons, and I just kind of stare off into the distance and don't say anything for a while. Because
yeah,
I just hate the Klingons.
Regular writer to the show, Shameless Otaku, just is right there with you. He hates Klingons.
I can retcon this stuff. Like, I can make up lots of stuff, like, it was an over-aggressive cure to the augment virus, you know, that, like, caused the additional ridges, you know, whatever. I can even just go, like, there's an episode where they reference a D7 being a ship, and if you freeze frame it, it's really clearly not the D7 that we know and love from the original series, which the D7 from the original series, the Katingas that we saw in the movies are roughly the same design. They're the same ship, just in green and not gray. Now, D7 is... Now, D7, to be fair, is not a Klingon designation for that ship. It's a Starfleet designation for that ship. So they could just be using it for, like, a size and class. But I will say, in the episode where the D7 shows up in Discovery, they are very... It's really hard to get a good look at it. Like, I think they zoomed in on purpose. Like, they don't want you to get a good look at the ship. So when it's identified in voiceover, like, they're like, it's a D7, trust us. It's not going to look anything like a D7. Pretend it does. We can't use that design. Pretend it does. So, like, you know.
Yeah.
The Klingons, man. Like, I can rationalize the Klingons. Like, the show's good enough where I'm willing to rationalize the Klingons, but I have to, and that bothers me.
Uh-huh. Now, right there with you.
But...
Right there with you. Literally everyone I've talked to about the show has that same problem.
But I love everything else about it. I love how Lorca's just unlike anyone else we've seen in charge of a starship. And because I don't want to give spoilers, but, like, it's... The show is dark, but still has enough humor in it, and, like, oh, it's just so much fun, and you know everything's gonna go to hell.
Uh-huh.
Everything they're doing, because you never see it again, means something is gonna go terribly wrong. They're experimenting with technology never seen again in Star Trek. There's going to be a reason we never see it again.
I was thinking the same thing.
And I'm so excited for that. I'm so excited to see everything terrible happen, because my favorite Star Treks are the morally gray ones where terrible things happen. That's why I love Deep Space Nine. Where our heroes make bad decisions. Or at least morally ambiguous ones and have to live with it. Oh, I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. I'm right there with you.
Well, you know, Star Trek is an institution. You know, it's one of those science fiction franchises that's gone back, you know, forever. You know, speaking of another one of those institutions,
things that go on forever. There's no greater sci-fi TV institution than Doctor Who, and traveling through space with the Doctor's companions. Look at that. That was a seamless transition until I pointed it out. With the new series of Doctor Who on the horizon, with our brand new Doctor, who is going to be joining Jodie Whittaker in the TARDIS next year. Well, we have them. We have three new companions for her, actually.
What?
Yes. We have Mandip Gill as Yasmin, Tosin Cole as Ryan, and Bradley Walsh as Graham.
I'll put up their pictures for the viewers.
There's not that not too much of a to discuss here. Bradley Walsh had been rumored to be coming to Doctor Who for a while now, so now we just have it official and we know his name is Graham.
Yeah. So it's two young people and a game show host.
Yep. Two young people and a game show host. I don't know. That almost sounded like a sitcom.
Well, we can't make Doctor Who without at least one old white man.
Gosh dang it. It's still we got one old dude, but I do like that we have a pretty diverse group of folks coming with
the doctor.
I'm sure she'll have some goodly adventures with them.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice to go back to three companions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where the show started. I mean, yeah.
My question is that how many companions will she have by the end of the season? That number could go up or down. You don't know. You don't know what kind of joke I was making.
Oh, dear.
I'm just, you know, we don't know what kind of writer Chris Chibnall is. Maybe he wants to, like, you know, kill them all off.
I was about to say, gotta go full Agatha Christie, and then
Well, you know, the funny thing is, it's hard to say, because in the Moffat era, everybody was promoted like crazy. Like, when Danny Pink was added to the show, like, he was promoted almost at companion level in promotional materials, but he really wasn't a companion, he stayed at home. You know, he was, you know, a love interest more than anything else.
And he was only in about half the episodes, for that matter.
Yeah. Now, you know, meanwhile, like, if you go back to, you know, Russell T. Davies' run on the show during the Rose seasons, Mickey and Jackie, if characters of that prominence had shown, like, they were promoted as companions, obviously. I mean, Mickey really was sort of one and kind of gets underrated in that capacity. But
100% agreed.
I love Mickey. If those characters during the Moffat era would have had like big press junkets for their appearances and not just be considered side characters, because Davies was very, like, especially during more in the Rose seasons, more than anywhere else, did we get to know more about the home life of the companions. We've gotten that some of the other ones, but
I absolutely loved that. Sorry, I really liked that they did that.
Yeah, and he really didn't fall through with that, like, with Martha at all. Like, with Martha, we knew her family a little bit, but they weren't anywhere near the part of the story that Rose's family was. And while we all love Wilf from Donna's stuff, while Donna was the companion, we only got a little bit of her, like, her mom and her grandfather as characters. So, I don't know. I'm just hoping that it's, like, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? We don't know what kind of a writer Chris Chibnall is, like, for how he's going to treat, like, the extended cast.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. All things of media circus. Anyways, I'm excited. Even if there is a game show host in the TARDIS.
It'll be good. There's not much else I can say either, because it's just, oh, here's some British actors. They're also going to
Here's
be
all
in
the
this
things
show
you've
I
seen
like.
That they've been in.
Well, I mean, at least we're all in agreement that we're pretty much fairly optimistic about this.
Yeah.
Unlike the next story, which is that the Han Solo movie has wrapped up, and they finally gave us a title.
Oh,
so
wow.
So we can stop calling it the untitled Han Solo anthology film.
I've had to talk that so many times.
Now we can call it Solo, a Star Wars story. And I pause because there's a colon in there.
I kind of wish I was still calling it untitled Han Solo.
Oh, there's a colon in there already. there's an upper and a lower colon. Heyo, poop anatomy jokes.
There's the story.
I mean,
Solo movie has a title. Solo, a Star Wars story.
And
wow.
And still no one... You know, I have seen people complain about a Star Wars story on the anthology film titles. And the only reason I'm not that bothered by it is the fact that, like, Rogue One it's not even used in the actual film. Like, it's on the promotional materials, but if you look at the, like, opening credits of the movie, at no point is a Star Wars story on screen in that film.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Solo, a Star Wars story, is a terrible name. It just is. I'm sorry.
Well,
just
especially
calling it
if,
Solo is a terrible name.
If they do the same thing where they did with Rogue One, and they just have... they don't have a Star Wars story on the title card, we're going to sit there in a movie theater with Solo, like, 8 feet high. Like, okay.
So,
and then I'll be thinking about what kind of cup that I wish I was drinking out of to get me through this movie.
So the thing is, the problem with this movie has for me is that every time I think of it, so you know how they did that Kinect Star Wars, like, dancing game?
And
they made a version of the Jason Derulo song Riding Solo as I'm Han Solo.
Yep, and they had the mocap of Han Solo dancing.
You should just Google Han Solo Riding Solo, and there are YouTube videos of this. I don't want to play it because I don't want to get copyright flagged on YouTube,
right?
Because we do put this on YouTube. But it is
a thing.
It is a thing, and it is hilarious. Oh.
But yeah, that's totally what we're...
if they don't play that
like,
song,
that needs to play over the credits.
During the... Yeah.
That needs to play as the credits roll.
I would be disappointed if that's not somewhere in there.
Right? Like, it just, like, it needs to be, like, that 90s movie, like, that early 2000s 90s movie moment where the pop song comes on over the credits and, like, starts going, like, yeah, no, it needs to, yes, I need this. I need this in my life. Ron Howard, you're editing the film right now. Get that in there. Get it in there. Get it in there. I'm Han Solo.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, Trey, you were just saying this before we got started on the show, and I'm honestly prone to agreeing with you. It's like, even with, like, these modern Star Wars movies, like, everyone's gonna love the classics. You have made no secret of the fact that you're extremely fond of episode 7. I have my Rogue One poster behind me.
Yeah.
There's no way this is going to be anyone's favorite Star Wars movie.
Right.
There's literally no way.
Look, I don't think this movie's going to be terrible. I think it's going to be serviceable and okay. But I think that's going to be my description of the movie. Movie is serviceable and okay. Ron Howard's done some amazing stuff like Apollo 13. But most of his films, my opinion of them is, that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind seeing, like, Apollo 13 is the only one that stands out, and I go, like, oh my god, this movie's amazing. Like, all the other ones, I'm like, and maybe it's because I'm obsessed with the space program. like, and I'm like, they're actually weightless because he did it in the Vomit Comet. They shot scenes, and, like, they actually did, like, Ron Howard literally had them put a, like, some of the scenes in weightlessness in Apollo 13 are shot in the Vomit Comet, the NASA plane, where they put sets in there. And so, like, it's not strings. It's not faking weightlessness. It's actual weightless actors. And I love that so much. But the rest, everything else Ron Howard's done that I've seen, my response is, oh, that was all right. Like, it's not going to be bad. Like, I'm not going to go, like, oh, this was hot garbage. But it's also not going to wow me. Like, I just know it. It's not going to be anybody's favorite Star Wars movie. It's going to be that movie that everyone consistently puts, like, well, it wasn't the prequel.
Well,
I mean, technically it's a prequel, but...
That seems to be the general consensus of, you know, everyone about this film is, like, it's not going to wow me, but...
Like, there are people
okay.
who... Yeah, there are
no one wanted this.
There are people who
literally
hate Episode 7. There are people who hate Rogue One. These people
they're
have
called
no.
Wrong.
They're called wrong, but they exist. Like, But because those are films you can feel passionately about one way or another, I believe it is physically impossible to feel passionate about a Ron Howard film.
Ouch.
In one way or the other. So, and of course I say that and like five people are going to like comment and say like they're going to pick up some Ron Howard movie I'm not thinking of and say like, oh, this is amazing. And my response is going to be to them, that was all right.
All opinions.
Oh, Ron Howard.
But you know what? At least, you know, Han Solo as a film, like, that's like an idea for a film, right? Like,
right.
There's a character.
That's still a character.
You know what?
You can tell there's going to be a story there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You know what doesn't have any characters? The board game Settlers of Catan. Yet! Yet, we're apparently now going to, if the studios have anything to say about it, we're going to get a Settlers of Catan movie, because why the hell not? They're making Tetris as a trilogy. Well, at least Tetris is a trilogy.
We already had Battleship.
We had Battleship. At least, though, with Battleship, like, Battleship seems like kind of a bad idea, but there's battle in the name. And ships.
And there's ships. Like,
and, like, the whole point of the game is you're literally trying to kill each other. So you can, like, throw together a generic blockbuster around that. They didn't do a good job when they made Battleship, but, you know, they tried. Like, that was just a fit. Settlers of Catan is, like, what? Like, how big of a character is the sheep going to be?
I know. Like that, and that's the crazy thing. Like there are no people. Like there's no Settlers of Catan is just you trying to strengthen your little society that you're.
It's gonna be sheep farming the movie. Build a road. I don't know, something
like,
with wood.
I really want one of those, like, you know, actors you can always count on to be really melodramatic in there. So, you know, maybe like Anthony Hopkins, you know, like just... you need to understand, son, it's not that you just need
character.
Sheep. You need... If you're going to succeed, you need wood. You're going to need to trade wood for sheep.
I want there to be a wide shot of the landscape and everything be composed of hexagons.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that now there's
yes.
an idea.
Like, there's...
And like to be fair, I'm gonna say something. I don't think it's impossible to make turn a board game into a movie. If that were the case, then like Clue wouldn't exist,
well,
and that's a great movie.
But Clue is also a murder mystery. I am literally staring at three copies of Clue right now. My
yeah,
wife
I mean,
has a
you,
thing for
it,
Clue.
Like, Clue has characters.
It all depends on like which board game you pick.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Like
because yeah,
like I think
like,
so, yeah,
13 Dead End Drive would be great because that's the same kind of like. Murder mystery solving, you know, trying to escape a house.
Right.
I'm gonna put the spectrum
like,
from
Operation. Not so much.
I'm gonna put the spectrum of board games for how suitable they are for films on the spectrum of Clue, on the side of good idea for a movie, and on the far end, Rummy Cube.
Yeah. Oh, agreed.
Or you know.
I really can't wait for the Connect 4 movie.
Right, like, so, yeah, Connect 4 is also, like... Connect 4 is on the Rummy Cube half, but, like, a little bit closer, because, like, maybe you could
yeah.
do some metaphor with destruction. Like, at least, like, Settlers of Catan, I'll say, is probably, like, a third of the way, like, two-thirds of the spectrum away from Clue and a third of the way from, like, Rummy Cube. Like, at least there's a setting.
It's still on the, like, half of the spectrum where there's no characters and no story.
Someone
inherit to the gate.
They're settling a place. They're settling Catan.
And they gotta trade sheep.
Right, like, but you can, like, it's a terrible idea for a movie. I think this is stupid, but it's like, I'm like, on the abstract principles, like, I understand this more than I understand, like, the fact that there is this guy trying to, like, the Tetris movies will not happen, but there is literally a guy trying to make a Tetris trilogy, and that is a game about abstract shapes blinking out of existence when it's stacking squares. Like, no characters, no setting, no story. There's a mild Russian vibe because a Russian dude invented it.
Nope.
Like,
there'll be...
Like, Settlers is like, how do you make a Settlers movie? That's like trying to make a Carcassonne movie. Like, that's trying to... Like, how do you...
You know, I feel like...
Like, even Monopoly has, like, people are trying to buy everything. You know what I mean? Like, you could do Wall Street. Like...
Okay, hear me out, though. There is a... I think I may have found a way to do a Catan movie. But it couldn't be a regular Hollywood release. It would need to be an adult film. He had to find a way to get rid of all his wood. Oh, yeah.
Like, I could see, like... I could see maybe, like, it's harder with, like, European-style board games to even make a movie because there's not conflict between players in a game like Carcassonne or, like, even as much, like, you could do Empire Builder, I guess, or Ticket to Ride, but that would just be, like...
Ticket to Ride, there'd be a...
Yeah.
And, we kind of had Hell on Wheels as a television series already. It's...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. Oh my God.
Why is this a thing? Why are you, like, I understand Hollywood that you are afraid of doing original ideas and just want to recycle existing properties to play on the nostalgia to make money. But this is not the idea.
No.
This is not the, I am just hoping, praying, and crossing my fingers that this goes into development hell like Tetris and we never see it. And it just never materializes, even though it's got producers on board and a studio.
Dear God. Who was dumb enough to get talked into this?
I would tell you in a second, except my browser just crashed on my iPad. This story is so dumb, it crashed the browser on my iPad.
Oh my gosh.
And now as I reopen Safari, I can answer that question. No, I don't need the New Mutants trailer. What is happening? There we go. So it's Gail Katz, Dan Lin, and Jonathan Elric are producing with Blaze Hemingway writing the screenplay. Again, what that screenplay is going to be about is anyone's guess. But I'm betting it starts with opening. The place, Catan. The people.
Settlers.
The sheep. Traded for wood.
But who would the, like, what would you call the settlers of Catan? Like, Catanites?
I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce Catan. It's a German game. They're settling Catan.
Yeah, so they would eventually become...
And we're going to call them Steve, Mark, Cindy, Barbara, and Sven.
Take me to the space hospital.
Ah, that was so good.
Anytime I hear Sven, that's where I'm going to go.
Like, Jesus Christ.
You know where we should go?
Anywhere but here.
Not to Catan.
I'm just saying, I don't know. I think this film's going to be legendary.
Yeah,
and the people who make it will be legends.
You know who's a real legend? John goddamn Constantine.
I thought you were going to say John Legend and take us a whole different direction on the show.
No. Legends of Tomorrow is a pretty fun show. I just finished watching season 2 finally because I've been so behind.
Oh god, you gotta start watching season 3 now.
I know, I can actually catch up. But like this last season, especially incorporated a lot of themes of magic, which is good, because something that I wanted to happen is that John Constantine, even if it is just like for one episode,
two episodes,
is going to what?
Two episodes.
Okay, well, even better. Even if it is only for a couple episodes, John Constantine, played by our beloved Matt Ryan, is coming to Legends of Tomorrow. And it's not just that. Not only is there more Constantine goodness, but he is going to be allowed to not only smoke, but be bisexual.
Yay!
Yeah!
Constantine's going to be chain-smoking and hitting on dudes. The way he was meant to be.
Everything NBC was afraid of comes to pass.
Well, I mean, and it's not just NBC. In Justice League Dark, the animated movie, the R-rated animated movie, I cannot emphasize that R rating enough. Mm-hmm. He doesn't smoke a single cigarette.
Well, I
in that entire cartoon.
Like, let me tell you how much the CW people are on board for John Constantine smoking. Not only is he smoking is he going to be smoking on Legends of Tomorrow, in his animated CW Seed series, on the scene they gave us, he is smoking mm-hmm. throughout the whole thing. Like,
yeah, I noticed that. And it was weird because it's literally the same art style and character design from the Justice League Dark movie.
Which it wasn't going to be originally. If you look at the concept art from when the Constantine series was first announced, he looked different, and then they changed the look of the show to match the Justice League Dark movie.
Huh.
I think probably is an attempt to get more people to watch it.
Quite possibly.
I mean, because it's the same voice, so why not make them look the same? You know, it's same, probably, you know, it's the same animation studio.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so glad that like Constantine gets to be bisexual, because
same.
Honestly, like, so when it comes to like LGBTQ representation on television, it seems
most
like
most of it is on the CW DC shows.
I know, isn't that weird? But like, so it seems like television often is not afraid to show like when they do representation, they'll have gay dudes. They'll have gay women, and they'll have bisexual women. But you hardly ever see bisexual guys on shows. And it's this really weird thing where we're not, I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with bisexual men for some reason more than they're uncomfortable with gay men. Bisexual women get the pass because creepy dudes fetishize gay women. And it's just going to happen. And so it makes it more palatable. Also, there's a whole thing with toxic masculinity and by making so with the concept of toxic masculinity, when you make a woman more socially like a man by being into women, you are not weakening her. You are actually increasing her value in a patriarchal system, whereby making a man interested in men, you are feminizing him. And therefore making him weaker.
I hate talking
gender
about
theory. But anyway, so I think that I don't know why, but for some reason people get more freaked out about bisexual dudes. And so I think it'll be great. I will say a nice, like, the CW is like where there is so like all of the representation, most of the representation I can think of on television right now
That's why I did my joke.
Well, it's like, because we've got, and it's interesting, on Legends of Tomorrow, I'm really glad that there's a habit of erasing bisexuality on TV where a character who had previously had straight relationships, like, because it does happen in real life where gay people will have had straight relationships before they're comfortable coming out to themselves, but it's always this thing where the person is just suddenly 100% gay. They do, mm-hmm. in Legends of Tomorrow this season, in one of the episodes, hint that Sarah Lance is also still into guys. Because we know she's mm-hmm. had past romantic relationships with men. but we know obviously that she's also into women, and they really played that up in season two. And so just the casual, I'm like, yay, bisexuality.
It's nice to see the better examples of representation, and it's nice to have it with a character like John Constantine, who's
like the,
you know, he's a very strong character.
Yeah,
I don't just mean physically.
The only current DC show I can think of without a strong representation in it out of the main cast is The Flash, where there are side characters, but none of the primary cast are LGBTQ, because Arrow's got Mr. Terrific. Obviously,
and it previously had Sarah Lance,
right? And then obviously Legends, like, Sarah's pretty much the main character now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an ensemble show, but she's the Captain Kirk, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Captain Kirk is actually the 100% best comparison out of any of the Star Trek captains to Sarah Lance. Violates the Prime Directive, makes out with people and punches people. Yeah. And then Supergirl obviously has, you know, Alex and Maggie. And so, yeah. Yeah, no, it's The Flash. Just because the captain has, you know, is gay on The Flash, but none of the main characters. That actually makes it more conspicuous that it doesn't.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with, like, the Tracy 13 show, or that's in development, or Black Lightning, or, well, are there any representation on iZombie? That's technically a DC show.
I haven't watched iZombie.
But it's not Arrowverse, though. It's, you know, different people.
Right.
It's also got a much smaller cast. You haven't watched iZombie?
I haven't watched iZombie.
Oh my god, go check. You've got Netflix, right?
Yeah, I've got Netflix.
Yeah, dude, go watch it. It is good.
I've been meaning to give it a look. There's some squeaky stuff, so I it's one of those things I'll have to watch when my partner's out of town.
It's a lot of brain eating, yeah. Yeah, a lot of brain. It's the main character's a zombie. But, it's Legends of Tomorrow. Constantine.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Man, there's not a lot to talk about because, you know, he's still going to just be Matt Ryan showing up and being Constantine. He just...
It's Matt Ryan being awesome. I mean, he was born to play that part.
I mean, they didn't let him smoke on Arrow, but they didn't really give him much of an opportunity to smoke on Arrow.
And it made up for it because he had a peacock feather to scratch his ass just to get back at the good folks in NBC. So I'm good with
it. Yeah. And so, but also it's just the fact that the showrunners at Legends are like, oh no, this will not do. We need to explicitly tell everyone that John Constantine likes dudes. Like that, like, cause I doubt it's going to be necessary for the plot. But it is necessary for all of the episodes of Constantine that have happened before this. It is necessary for that to alter your perspective on the NBC show. And that's why I'm like, this is important. If it turns out to be completely non-important to the plot of the episodes.
I'm really happy about it. I'm more representation. More accurate version of Constantine, please. Yes, all for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and I think... What's next?
Well, hey, Gen, what did you do this last weekend, Gen? Gen? Huh?
Come on, Gen.
I was at Anime Fusion.
God damn, Fusion.
Fusion.
I was over in Minneapolis at their new location. This is their second year they've been in this location, but it's new to me. It was the Doubletree over in St. Louis Park, which is not the Doubletree that is used by Detour. This is a different Doubletree.
Doubletree.
Lots of Doubletrees.
Lots of Doubletrees.
Double your pleasure, double your fun, double your trees.
Didn't say quadruple trees. And I enjoyed the space. It's got a very interesting atrium setup where it's like terraced. Like there's all these different levels. Like there's the pool, and then there's like a seating area, and then you go up one more, and there's like hotel rooms, and it's just, it's very interesting and very cool, and a very like just nice and like open space that you can put like lots of different stuff on each of the levels, which was really nice. I sold as an artist all weekend, so I was stuck in the freezing vendor room. So I didn't get to see much of the rest of the convention, but I had a good time. I got to see some friends I haven't seen in a while. Got to hang out with people who already live in the cities, and got to get I got a good feel again for Minnesota cons as opposed to Wisconsin cons, because there's a definite like difference in feel to them. I'm not sure if I could define that at the moment, but there is a difference just in how they feel, and that could be said about cons all over the world.
Well, it's obviously it's been a while since I did a Minnesota con, but they feel a little bit different. But it's like, it's still very much Midwestern regional. Like it's like you contrast that to like East Coast cons are very different from the Midwest cons. But there's the region that we're in, which really goes down to Chicago through Minneapolis. Like it's the, and I'll include obviously the Iowa stuff. Like there's regional differences. Like cons in northern Illinois feel different from cons in Wisconsin, feel different from Minnesota, but they feel much more similar to each other than, say, a con in Indiana. Like, not, I don't count Robin Con as an Indiana con. I want to be very clear. they're in the Chicago area. They're physically in Indiana, but barely. Like, you go to a con in Indianapolis, and it's a very different experience than going to a con in Minneapolis. But like, and while it is a different experience between like, say, a no brand con and a fusion, there's, you can still see the genetic.
Well, and
I really enjoyed the one fusion I did go to. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was just trying to think of specific differences that this con has, and one of them is that Anime Fusion has there's a page dedicated to this in their program guide to specific room parties, and that is something that I do not see a lot anymore, is like dedicated room parties that have like themes. There are certain cons that do have them, but
the room party culture is way stronger in the Twin Cities than it is in in Wisconsin, and it used to be stronger in Wisconsin, is now, but a lot of it has to do with, honestly, the circumstances of hotels. Like, Daishokan used to have a really strong room party scene in its early years when it was in Stevens Point, but they were also in a hotel that had a large atrium that, like, was really conducive to having a party area, versus their current location at the Kalahari in the Dells doesn't, like, the hotel rooms are very separate from the con space. They're all very much, down a hallway. And if you
want to trek to a certain room party, you got to go like so far, especially if your room is like all the way on the other, like if your room is in like the Sands and their room party is past the lobby, you're trekking a good, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, and it's also like, you know, No Brand Con at the Chula Vista does not have a good room party area. Like, there's nowhere really to put them. You
that's
go,
part of the problem is resort cons.
But even if, like, you take a look at, say, the Geek Con at the Marriott, in Marriott Madison West in the Madison area, while it is true that the rooms open to a central thing, the entire hotel's rooms open to a central thing, and so they're very sensitive about noise. And so the hotel really cracks down on anyone really doing anything that could run a room party at that hotel. No Brand Cons.
In fact, they did crack down on parties for the couple of years when people tried to do them. So people kind of gave up on them.
Yeah, people gave up on them. They were still happening at No Brand Con right up until No Brand Con moved to the Chula Vista, because the plaza where we also ran Nexpo, but we didn't really encourage room parties when we did that because we were lazy. That building, which no longer exists, as I drive by the open wound in the earth where it used to be, and by that I mean the new hospital they're building. like, that did have a nice atrium area, and we're on the first floor. And there were still people trying to run room parties there up until they moved. And can you think of Kitsune Khan's hotel doesn't really afford room parties well.
No.
It's like, I don't know. Evercon is kind of not, like, their con space is separate from their hotel space.
And it used to be a thing where, I remember as a No Brand staffer, we would do this all the time. We would host a room party to try to sell registration to try to get people.
That's been a major change to the con scene in Wisconsin, where everyone has adapted the Ambassador Alley model, which, to be fair, is much better for getting free registrations than the room parties ever were, and are much more affordable to run than, say, room parties. And so, like, now you get Ambassador Alley tables for conventions, where cons are giving each other free tables, which... It is, like, in the Wisconsin con scene, most of the big room parties were all con-sponsored, where in the cities, that's not always the case. Like, you'll see much more independently run parties there. I think it really comes down to Convergence, I think, made the big difference in the cities, which Convergence, for those of you listening who aren't local to this region, is a convention held in the Twin Cities over 4th of July weekend every year. And room parties are a huge deal there, and people go all out developing there.
Well, because it's an adult convention, I believe. It is a 21-plus convention.
I had a friend who, his description of Convergence was that he had a good time, but the whole time he was there, he was thinking, I feel like this place needs a bigger venue, but I don't think they could find... a venue that would let them be as raucous as their usual crowd.
Yeah, and so, it even the smaller Twin Cities cons, though, like, that kind of bled over everywhere. Like, MarsCon, the science fiction convention, has a dedicated party floor that you have to reserve rooms through the con to get on there. It really just kind of bled over. It's an old sci-fi con scene thing. Room parties are a much bigger deal at science fiction conventions because they had an older audience, and it's funny with I write Unconventional, the webcomic, and when I started the comic's been going for like 8 years, and in the early years there were a lot of scenes that took place at room parties run by the convention, and I had commenters. In those earlier years, who were from other regions, who commented how strange it was that conventions were the ones running other room parties at these events, because that's the way the culture. You know, my comic is set in the region I'm familiar with, and so I have the excuse of it's common here. But I stopped doing that in the comic as it died out. It's the Wisconsin room party, I'm sure that I've never gone to Wisconsin, so maybe they've got room parties. They are that older science fiction crowd. But for the most part, as Wisconsin's rebirth into its con scene comes from a younger generation, just room parties And as venues, it's really the venues. As venues became less welcoming to room parties, or just layout wise, like I'm not saying like an intentional thing, that it just sort of died out. You don't get things.
Though there's
like,
been a little bit of that too.
Yeah. Like it's just, I think it's just a myriad of factors just kind of shut it down here. While in the Twin Cities, they flourish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. That is the one. Yeah, that was that. If I was going to say the difference between Minnesota cons and Wisconsin cons, again, as you hit it on the head, is the room party culture.
Mm-hmm.
That is yeah.
In that there is one.
In that there is a. Well, the other thing, another thing that killed room parties is 24-hour programming.
That's
it. Used to be that if you wanted to do something at 11 p.m., you'd have to hit up a room party. Instead, there's a rave happening, and like panels are still going, and there's the 24-hour video game room, and there's the bar, and you can go straight from the bar to the VGR once you finish your drink. It's like I don't know, maybe drunk VR sounds like a good idea to you.
Or maybe,
that sounds like a terrible.
Maybe you.
That sounds
you
like the easiest way to throw up.
To come get yelled at by me about being about Evangelion, which I've had people do.
Drunk VR just sounds like.
It sounds like a great way to throw up.
Yeah.
You could throw up in space.
Yeah, and all over the VR equipment.
But you're not thinking it like a drunk person. You're thinking of it like the sober person who has to clean it up afterwards.
Yeah. Oh.
So Anime Fusion was fun, huh?
It was. I had a great time. I usually have a great time at Anime Fusion. It's not that huge, and it's just got a great feel to it. So if you're in the Twin Cities, around about October-ish time is when they usually have their dates. Come on down, check it out. It's real good.
Yeah, what's the next con you're doing?
I actually will be selling at Daishokan at the Kalahari in November.
That's
Daishokan.
I will be manning the No Brand Con ambassador table at Daishokan at the Kalahari in November.
Hey.
Yeah.
I will be doing several panels for Takoyaki Entertainment at Daishokan at the Kalahari, also in November.
So
theory.
So that is the next time you could find any of us at a con, you will find all of us at a con.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's exciting.
Daishokan. Find all three of us and.
Well, I haven't been to Daishokan in years, so this is my first time going back since it got big.
Yeah,
like last time,
you're gonna be real surprised at how big it is.
Last time I was there, there were only like 2,000 attendees.
Yeah, it's a very,
it's so different.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
But yeah, good times.
Yay!
We should move on to the mailbag.
Let's take a look at the mailbag. We got something in it again. What are we? Okay, just. There it is, and I found my letter. It is from the one, the only, Gruff McGuff. And his subject is Archimedes is full of tree disease. Hi, Nerd and Ty. Long-time listener, first-time writer. Never, ever time exister. Oh.
I just
wanted to write in and say that I heard a rumor that Archimedes is full of tree disease. And not like human disease or anything, but weirdly Dutch Elms disease. Archimedes has a tree disease, and he's hiding it from everyone. Why are you hiding it, Archimedes? Why are you hiding that you're a tree with a tree disease? Also, Discovery is good except for the Klingon designs. What was I just saying? Everyone says that. Okay, well.
Well, and also, Why do you think he's hiding it?
He's afraid to tell us that he's a tree.
Why would you want everyone to know you have Dutch Elm disease?
They might have to cut you down and all the surrounding Arkhamizes.
Right?
That, which is unacceptable, frankly. I am not willing to sacrifice that many Arkhamizes.
Oh, this show is so stupid. All right.
Arkhamizes.
We're great.
My thoughts and prayers are with you. That you fight this disease.
Yes.
And you win.
And we hope the local forestry service takes good care of you.
Mm-hmm. We're worried about you, buddy. And your tree problems.
All right, so that moves us on. That moves us on to the Vomit at Steve Challenge. The Vomit at Steve Challenge, for those who are unaware, is the part of the show where I read a line from a book, and the challenge to you, the listener slash viewer slash being at homer slash in your car, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you guess what book it is, you get included in the Hall of Awesome, and the benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, you get your name listed on our website. 2, we read your name aloud every episode. 3, a third thing that doesn't exist, there are only 2 things. So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamai, Zero, Ren and Ascenti, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slytherin D, Seamus Tucker, the Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Source, Paper Godzilla, Cavzy, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset.
Good golly.
Random Ramblings Man's name just got me in the middle this time. So the line from the book, we've been reading from the same one for a while that no one's guessed. The line is, "Wicked world! Wicked world!" If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us on the form. If you have anything else you want to ask us, do it there too. Explain why Arkhamis is not a tree. Explain why he's made of meat like the rest of us. Ask us why Nick should cosplay backwards Constantine. I don't know what that means.
What is backwards?
It's like Constantine, but backwards. Explain why Gen needs to get a face tattoo. Ask me why I always wear this bandana except for when I'm not. Just go and give us your thoughts, your opinions, your dreams, your hopes, your wishes. And again, at nerdandtie.com/contact. Or you can call and leave a voicemail by dialing area code 414-375-0480. And that spells absolutely nothing on your phone because there's a bunch of zeros. So, but call that, and if you leave a voicemail there, we might play it if we decide that it's funny enough to play, and your voice could be on the show. Be on the show like people you know. That rhymed. Unless you don't know us, and then you should get to know us and become our friend. Because we think of you as our friend, listener, slash viewer, slash being at homer, slash being in car, slash being at worker. Because you're all we have.
It's true.
All right. So, with that, perhaps we should begin to wrap this thing up and bring us to a curtain.
Yeah, I think it's time to put an end to this insanity.
Into this madness.
Put a bow on it.
To this dream of unknown things that haunts us in the night. Well, I am Traydorn.
I might be Nick Izumi.
And I am the artist formerly known as Genjamin.
Currently known as Genjamin also. But if you remember, you can always subscribe to Nerd and Tie by going to iTunes, by doing it on Google Play, by doing anything RSS readers take on Stitcher. On Stitcher, don't forget Stitcher. You can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/TRAEGORN. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please like, subscribe, and thumbs up, and hit the bell for the little notifications. Also, you should check out Nick Izumi's channel, where his video essays go up at youtube.com/Nick Izumi.
Finally finishing that Fate Stay Night one. Look forward to that.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Nerd and Tie. You can follow us at Tumblr at Nerd and Tie. You can follow us on Facebook at /Nerd and Tie. There's a pattern for social media here. And remember, if you want to financially support the show, you can contribute to our GoFundMe for our legal fund at GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie. You can sponsor episodes by going to the sponsorship information linked on Nerd and Tie, or you can contribute to the Patreons of myself. Mine is patreon.com/TRAEGORN. Nick's is patreon.com/NickIzumi. And Gen doesn't have a Patreon, but she does have a Ko-fi link, so go to ko-fi.com/Genjamin. It's like Benjamin, but with a Gen. You can support Gen too. And all of these things are the dreams that you have and are the things that you make real, that you do in the world when you aren't sleeping, dreaming, being, consuming, doing the things that make you you. Say your catchphrase, Nick.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
This is a... get a little bit weird at the end.
I couldn't, it threw me off because I couldn't hear the song.
Yeah.
Well, you know. I had it.
To us, the song is like really, really soft, so I never know if it's playing or not.
I know, it's because if I don't, then Skype turns your audio down. We're still recording. I got to stop the show now.
Might be a good idea someday.